School. If you were a Christian or if you went along to church as a kid, you would have heard probably the story of Moses told in several different ways, different parts. So we're not going to look too much at the Sunday school services, not because they're not important, but we're going to try and look at the life of Moses in a different way. And we're also not necessarily looking at it in order. We're jumping around just in case you've got confused over the weeks so far. We're on to this section, Moses the Mumbler. Some of the ones we've had so far have been Moses the Mediator, Moses the Meek and Humble, and talking about Moses' mission from God and how ultimately Moses was a man of God, and all the other M words. But just as a quick overview of Moses' life, this is the very, very short version. You won't even find this on Wikipedia. This is very cut down. But it gives a nice idea of where we've got to, and particularly where this verses that we've been reading sits in his life, because it's actually 80 years into his life. It very nicely, for someone who likes numbers, divides up into chunks of 40. You've got the first 40 years, his birth, his time, in effect, living as a prince. He's taken to the royal palace in the story that's right at the beginning of Exodus. If you're not familiar with it, you can look at another time. Then we have this big events, and his big events in his life seem to happen 40 years apart. He sees some people arguing. He sticks up for the one who's his compatriot. Sadly, kills an Egyptian, and in shame, to escape punishment, he flees to Midian. And then we don't really get a lot about the next 40 years of his life, other than to know he lives as a shepherd, he brings up a family, he gets married. And there's little bits in there, but there's not a lot about what's happening. But we can only assume that he's changed somewhat, because the Moses we see at the 80 years and the burning bush is different than the Moses who killed a man and fled there. He still wants to stick up for his people. He's still concerned about his fellow countrymen. But things are a little bit different, and he approaches things a bit differently. And we can, I guess, summarise a bit that God has been working in his life in those 40 years. He's been faithfully following God, even though we don't learn dramatic stories or whatever might have happened in his time as a shepherd. And it would have been a big contrast for him to go from the life of growing up in a palace to living as a shepherd in the hills. Then we have the burning bush, the plagues, and then another 40 years of wandering the wilderness after that, and then his death. Dies at the age of 120, and Acts gives a very good overview of that side of his life, if you want to see that from that point of view. But there's a few things significant. One is that God has obviously been preparing Moses for this. We get to the point where he's 80 years old, and you might have thought, actually, after the killing the Egyptian and the fleeing the 40 years, Moses might have been thinking, well, what's going on? What's going on in my life? What's happening here? There's not very much happening. You might have thought, actually, that was it for him in terms of God's plan for his life or God's calling for his life. But then he clearly has a very dramatic event that Andy talked us through a bit at the beginning, the burning bush, the holy ground, hearing God speaking out of a bush. We don't know exactly what it might have looked like. John, a few weeks back, talked a bit more about some of the pictures. Maybe this helps. It's probably also the picture in your mind depends on what film you've seen, maybe of Moses and the idea of the burning bush. It's very hard for most of us to understand the idea of a burning bush at all, let alone one that's talking, maybe. But clearly God spoke to him in a direct way. And ultimately, the verse that was just read to us, Exodus 3, verse 10, God speaks directly to Moses and says this, Exodus 3:10. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. That must have been quite a tough statement for Moses to hear. He would have understood what it meant to go to Pharaoh. He lived in the royal palace. He was brought up in that kind of area. It wouldn't have been unknown to him what the implications of that were. He would have known that that was God putting something quite big and significant on him. God asking him to be the one involved in the process of taking his God's people, the Israelites, out of Egypt, out of slavery. I don't know how many people here would say they've heard something that direct from God. What we're seeing here is Moses being called by God to do something quite specific. We can be called in other ways. It doesn't have to be an audible voice. I think other people, maybe they've been called through reading something in the Bible. They've been called by something someone else says to them. They've maybe heard someone speaking about a situation in another country and felt God speaking to them through that. But God calls Moses specifically in this way for this particular job. As part of this series. There's something that John shared in his notes. This is from an article. Unfortunately, I messed up the URL. So if you want to find the URL, come and speak to me afterwards. But this is from a Canadian politician who wrote an article comparing the situation of Moses and particularly how it's political. Moses was being called into a political situation to go and meet with the ruler of the country to change something in the politics of that situation and how the Israelites were being treated. And this Christian politician equated that to his situation as a politician and trying to say how he made that work in his life. And he wrote a few things as a whole article. It's an interesting read. It's not too long. But he ends with a couple of things at the end. He's saying, he's helping us think about the two parts of it. There is times when we're called by God to do something specific. Moses is clearly called very specifically by God in these verses to do something very specific. We go on to see in a minute how Moses maybe worked through that, but it's clear from God what he's asking him to do. But the author of this article makes a point that actually that's rare. Moses, even in his life, he's waited 80 years to get to this point before he has this very specific calling from God. He would have cared about the Israelites. He would have cared that they're in slavery. It wouldn't have been unknown to him. But it's only at this point you get something specific. But the author of the article is making a point, actually, there's other times where we're called to be rather than to do. And that's more general for our lives. So whilst we think about calling and we can think about our calling, we can, if we feel we've been called to God, we can be challenged again. If we haven't been, we don't feel we've been called by God to do something, we can be challenged by how God calls Moses. But it's also part of our lives, and to not be thinking that the only thing in our lives to live for is God calling us to do something. We're called more generally to be Christians in the situation we're in. We're called to live as Christians in our day-in, day-out life. If Moses had waited for God's calling, he would have wasted two-thirds of his life, in effect. We've got to believe that Moses lived as a good man. He was doing the call to be for the large parts of his life leading up to this point. Something to have in the back of our minds as we work through this. But the first bit we get with Moses in these verses, really, I guess we could say he's pulling this trick, isn't he? I don't know if anyone used this at school. Has anyone? I wish I was smart enough like this kid. The dog ate my homework. Maybe you could x-ray him to find it. I don't know if I ever went through with an excuse quite like that. But without being harsh on Moses, what we see in these verses from the end of where we read for into chapter 4 is, in effect, Moses is making excuses. God's told him that he wants him to do something very specific. And Moses doesn't immediately say, I'll do that. He says a few other things. Not quite of the level of the dog ate my homework. But he is making what we would call excuses. We start off with this, Exodus 3, 10 to 12, the last two verses. It's very hard to try and come up with a speech bubble that equates to God. But anyway, God's in bold, the more square one, the round one is Moses, if you're not sure where we're going with this. But anyway, God is sending Moses, giving him something specific to do. And Moses' first response is really, I'm the wrong person. You don't want me, you want someone else, however you might be able to go about it. What's quite a little bit ironic for Moses is probably no one more suited to doing this role. He was from a unique position because of the way he was brought up early on in his life. He would have known the situation in Pharaoh, or at least be familiar with that kind of situation. He had a different education than many of the other Israelites would have had. But he still tried, in effect, to say, I'm the wrong person. He's saying that Moses thinks he's inadequate for the job, he's not up to it, he's unable to do what God wants, maybe, and so on and so on. And if we've ever used this excuse, either in our life or maybe with God, we realise actually it's a great excuse. Because if we can say we're the wrong person, it gets us off the hook. We can say, well, you know, yes, God, I'd love to do what you're asking me to do, but I'm not the right person. You want Jim over there or Megan over there or whoever it might be. We're saying fundamentally, you've got the wrong person. Maybe what we're really saying is, you know, that's not for me. You need to look elsewhere, God. But God's reply in Exodus 3, verse 12, is pretty short, pretty sweet, and to the point. I will be with you. Exodus 3, verse 12, God says, I will be with you. We can almost think about it that actually, on his own, Moses wasn't the right person. That is actually kind of true. He has got, in some ways, he's got a point. I don't know if that's the point Moses was trying to make. Moses couldn't go on to do what he did purely on his own. Yes, he was a good person. Yes, he was faithful. Yes, he was courageous, all these other things. But if you know how the story turns out, there's a lot of things he had to do that needed God to play a part. And God is making that point right from the beginning. I've called you to do this. I will be with you. I'm not going to leave you on your own to do this. It didn't mean Moses didn't have to do tricky things. It didn't mean Moses didn't have to step out into tough situations, but God wasn't leaving him to it. God was taking the skills and the expertise and Moses' character, but doing something more with it, something Moses couldn't have done just in his own strength. And then further on in from the verses that we read now, the conversation kind of continues. It's a very open and honest conversation, actually, between Moses and God. He's saying pretty much what's on his heart, what's on his mind. He's talking about his fears, his feelings of inadequacy, all those sorts of things. He's also... Right. Next thing he says is, I don't know what to say, Exodus 3:13-15. He's saying, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of my fathers has sent me to you, and they'll say, what is his name? And Moses is saying, okay, imagine this situation happens. Imagine things go like this. What am I going to say at this point? They're not going to believe me. I'm going to stumble, whatever it might be. And again, Moses answers quite directly, although maybe not in the way we would expect. These quite famous verses, God says, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me, Moses, to you. You might notice in your Bibles that I am is written in capital letters. There's significance there. It's probably a whole sermon just on this part. And I'm not going to go into all of it, but God is saying he's almighty, he's all-powerful, he keeps his promises, he doesn't change, and much, much more. And it's capitals because it's talking about significance in the name of God and what that means. But in the context of what we're looking at here, God is giving Moses an answer. He's saying, yes, given this situation, that could happen. They might ask that, they might query you. You tell them this. You tell them God has sent you. And again, I think God is showing Moses that Moses doesn't have to rely on his own understanding. God will help him. God will help him with a specific answer to a specific question if that situation comes up. So Moses has tried to say he's the wrong person. He's tried to say, I don't know what to say. A bit further on, now in Exodus 4:1-5, Moses says this. Exodus 4:1-5. What if they do not believe me? Or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you. So he's saying, okay, they're going to listen to me, but they're probably not going to believe me. Because even to the Israelites, who I'd imagine want to be saved from what's going on in Egypt, they might struggle to believe that Moses, someone who maybe only a few of them knew from the 40 years before he fled away from where they were, maybe they might wonder why he's the one being called by God to do this. Why isn't it someone else, maybe more qualified, someone else different? So Moses is saying, well, they're not going to believe me. And God answers again in maybe not the way you would expect. He says to Moses, what is that in your hand? We can see this in Exodus 4:2-3. What is that in your hand? And what God is starting to do is a few things. One, he's starting to introduce the idea of miracles, and this goes on throughout the plagues and all those sorts of things using these things. God says to Moses, take the staff in your hand and throw it onto the ground. Moses does that. It turns into a snake, and Moses gets very scared, which I think we can all empathize with that, if a stick turned into a snake, and Moses then runs off. God's doing a few things here. One is he's actually taking something Moses has already got. I think there's something in that, isn't it? That he's taking something that's familiar to Moses. He's taking that and doing something miraculous with it. But again, he's just another demonstration that Moses isn't doing this in his own strength, in a very real way. Moses couldn't have turned that stick into a snake. Moses couldn't have done that miracle without God working in his life, God making that happen. God again is showing that you're going to be in situations where very strange things to look at it. The plagues, if we look into that, are very abnormal, unnatural things are going to happen. I'm God. I'm powerful. I can make these things happen. It's starting to be a small demonstration of that. It's starting to show again that actually, if we take the example of Moses and make a step of faith and follow what God wants us to do, God can take our abilities, can take some of the things, the ordinary things we have, and do much more with them. God can honour our ability to step out in faith for him. God was asking Moses to do something that was tricky, undoubtedly, but God was going to do miraculous things to even make others believe that Moses was the right person to be doing them. On to the last of Moses' excuses. Maybe he's really trying to get out of it this time. And this is where we get the mumble from it. I don't speak proper. I'm not eloquent. I can't find the right words. This is in Exodus 4:10-17. Moses says this, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." And then God replies, again, maybe not the way we quite expect, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say." Moses, by this point, is trying to come up with a reason why he can't go. You know, again, you want someone else. You want someone who can stand up in front of Pharaoh and express things clearly. I'm going to stumble with my words. I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm not going to be able to argue, whatever it might be. And maybe some of us empathize with Moses here. When I was reading and preparing for this week, it struck me in these verses that I feel more like Moses in these verses than any other verses that we read about him. Some of the other bits I find quite hard to identify, the plagues or the miraculous things. I believe they happened, but it's quite a long way from my experiences. But I definitely feel like there's times in my life I've given other people excuses. And there's definitely times I've felt like I'm the wrong person for a situation. There's definitely times I've used the excuse of saying you want someone more qualified, you want someone different, you want someone more eloquent, you want someone who can speak proper, if you like. If we even I think about accents, my accent, I'm born in Essex, grew up in Luton, I went to university in Bristol, I've now ended up somewhere outside of Slough. It's not Queen's English, right? I'm not going to get a job reading the news on the BBC with my accent. So even sometimes I think, actually, why is God using me to speak to others? And I was reminded of this in the way you kind of are with these things. When I was preparing for this sermon, I ended up in a conversation with some people from Poland. Clearly their first language is not English, and we were talking about various things, and at one point one of them had a confused look on their face and they said, "Matt, can I just stop you there? I haven't understood a word you said for the last 30 seconds. Any chance you could repeat it?" And maybe sometimes we feel like that in our speech, in our experience, in our skills. We feel like the mumbler, we feel like we're not eloquent enough, we feel like we're not the right person to talk to others. We feel like Moses. "You want someone else, Lord." What's interesting, when we get to this point, this is, if you count them, the fourth excuse maybe Moses has been using. Exodus 4:14, we see God's response. The Lord's anger burned against Moses. By this point, he's maybe a bit angry. Maybe a bit thinking that Moses isn't getting the point. Maybe thinks that Moses is trying to get out of it. We don't know. But it does appear that Moses has a genuine complaint with this one. This is not the dog ate my homework, right? This is actually Moses, it's something he struggles with, because we see that God provides a solution. God sends, or has sent, or is already sending, if you read the verses, Moses' brother Aaron. He's saying, right, you'll have Aaron. Aaron will go with you anytime you need to speak. Aaron will say the words. It's quite interesting how the thing works between the two of them. In Exodus 4:16, it says this. This is God explaining how it's going to work. "He, Aaron, will speak to the people for you, Moses, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him." Sounds a bit like a ventriloquist dummy or something like that. But anyway, the idea that Moses is the one coming up with the words to say, Aaron is the one expressing the words. But God's made the situation work. God's done something maybe unexpected. God sent someone to help Moses. And maybe for some of us, we felt the same thing, where there's times we've struggled with stuff and we felt that God has actually sent someone to struggle with us, to come alongside us, to visit Pharaoh with us, to say the words, whatever it might be. That's what God's doing here. God's doing something very direct. And that's what gives us a hint that actually it's something genuine for Moses, because God felt the need to send Aaron to come alongside him in the struggle. And Aaron did ultimately play his part. Aaron did go along with Moses in all these times. So maybe we can identify with what's going on here with Moses. Maybe we feel inadequate when God asks us to do something. Maybe we feel that God has put something on our heart. God has given us a situation that he wants us to work in. And maybe we feel, like Moses did, that we can't supply the right words. Maybe we feel that we haven't got the strength and courage. We're not the right person. But what we can see from these verses is actually, we just need to go along with God. He'll fix these situations. He'll give us someone to say the right words, if that's what it needs. He'll be with us there in those situations. He won't leave us to it. He'll give us the strength and courage. I'm sure Moses needed a lot of strength and courage to stand up to Pharaoh. So how can we look at these verses and try and work out what they can teach us of our lives? Because we're not all stood in front of a burning bush being asked to go and free an entire nation from slavery of the Egyptian Pharaoh. That part of it might seem a bit abstract. Maybe we do identify with the idea of making excuses. Maybe that resonates with us. But I think there's a few things that can give us a challenge and give us something to think about from these verses. One is that actually, it kind of shows that we should be careful if we're trying to give God excuses. What we see in these verses is that God knows Moses very well, and God has an answer for every one of Moses' excuses. Not maybe the way that Moses wants it answered, but God has an answer. God is clear, I'm going to be with you, I will send someone with you, I can do miraculous things, whatever it might be in those situations. And it's interesting as well that we don't really get the sense that Moses is ever... It's not saying that Moses does wrong. In fact, next week is the M is Moses' mistakes. And I don't think this really comes under that. Moses is being open and honest with God about what he's feeling at this time. Yes, God appears to get angry by the fourth time, but he doesn't then punish Moses. Moses doesn't lose out by going through this process. It's not a punishment to have Aaron sent alongside. That's God helping him. So I think we can be encouraged to be open and honest with God, but ultimately, if we're just using excuses to get out of doing something from God, we might have to look at this story and see that that doesn't end well. God wants specific people to do specific things at specific times, and he'll make that happen. He'll give the right things to make that happen. And us standing there trying to make excuses might not work. But there's something else, I think, a bit wider that we can see. Is actually, there's much more of a process of God taking the characteristics and taking Moses and helping build him up over the 80 years that we get to this point and other ways. God's moulding Moses' character. God's been working on Moses since birth. God's been building Moses up into this man of God, as he's described. What God doesn't do is suddenly give Moses miraculous abilities. Yes, there is times where God lets Moses do miraculous things, but it's much more that God takes what Moses already has, shapes that, and uses those skills and abilities. Even in these excuses, God could have made Moses a perfect public speaker. That could have been his solution. He could have fundamentally changed Moses and suddenly given him the ability to do that. Instead, he used someone else to do that part. I think part of what we see in the story of Moses is actually God is far more eager to take people with what they've got. And obviously, he shaped Moses from the Moses who killed an Egyptian to the Moses we get to at the burning bush. He shaped that character, he built that character, but he didn't fundamentally give Moses different things that he didn't already have. He'd been working on those. He took the desire of Moses to protect his people, he took Moses' passion, all those things, and worked with it. So maybe sometimes for us, maybe if we're thinking about the idea of God calling us into something, we start to think, okay, I can only do this when God changes me. I feel that God's calling me to do some situation, but to get there, I need fundamentally different things to happen in my life. I need to be a great public speaker, or I need to have skills and abilities that I haven't got. And so maybe we're holding off on that because we think, I can't do that. I'm the wrong person at the moment, but I need God to change me. Actually, maybe we should be asking how we should use our own abilities and strengths to do God's will. One story that strikes me a lot is Annie Brown. Some of you will know here. She was part of this church. She still is, part of this church, but not physically. She's out in Nepal as a missionary working in education and having a fundamental, actually, impact on the education of a whole country in some of the work she's doing. If you knew her before you went out, what she's doing in Nepal is very similar to what she did here. Obviously, a different country, different education system. But God had been preparing her, and she says this herself, God had been preparing her as an educator, as a teacher for many years, until the point that he dramatically called her. And I believe that she was in a service here, and she felt suddenly God put on her heart to move out to Nepal, and she did within a few months, and then moved out there permanently. And I think God works far and often in those ways, where he takes the person we already are, he takes the skills and abilities. Sometimes it takes another person to point those out for us. I've definitely seen that in my life. It's not until someone else has said to me, do you know what, Matt, maybe you could give this a go. But God takes our skills and abilities, and maybe that changes our focus. If we're hanging on to suddenly be a different person before we can start working for God, versus thinking, actually, God, you've given me skills and abilities. They might need honing, they might need improving, but we're there. To finish, another way this is summed up is in the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 1:27-28 gives us another verse, another way to think about this that might be reassuring for many of us. 1 Corinthians 1:27-28 says this. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of the world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. We don't have to know everything. We don't have to be all-powerful. We don't have to have all the answers. God can take what we've got and do so much more with it. We don't need to be waiting till we get the special skills or ability that we think God needs to put on us to solve a situation. God can do many things with the gifts he's already given us. We just need to use them. I pray that all of us will take these words to heart. God can and does use us to do amazing things. We just need to trust in him and faithfully follow his plan for our life. Amen.